Hello. Today is Thursday the 12th of April. I'm Malcolm. Have selected the articles. We'll be making announcements, taking part in the reading together with Michael, Mayo, Jenny and Lysanne. In addition to reading today, Jenny will also be responsible for copying the recording from the master onto the listener sticks together with Mecky. Danny, our studio manager, is recording and editing the recording, and Fiona organises the distribution. The music you've just heard is called Moonflower, and as ever, is provided by Goffby, who composed, played and recorded it. The news items are taken from today's edition of the Hearts Advertiser, and I hand over now to Michael, who will read the headlines and the article.
Hello, I'm Michael, and this first article is entitled Buskers Face the Music Over New Code of Conduct, and there's a photograph of a busker playing an accordion. Do you think our city centre's buskers should face restrictions on volume and requests? The consultation on a local street performance code of conduct drafted by St Albans District Council, SADC, has now been circulated to businesses in the city centre. If the new rules are implemented, buskers will not be able to play music louder than just above ambient street noise. Set up a pitch within 50 metres of another performer, sell merchandise, solicit contributions from passers-by, use amplification or play loud instruments such as drums or trumpets. They must also take regular breaks to allow crowds to disperse, and any buskers under 18 must be accompanied by an adult.
Hello, I'm Mayo, and my article is entitled Pressure Stepped Up on Train Operator Over Timetable Changes. Politicians and commuters are ramping up the pressure on Thames Link ahead of changes to peak time train services running through Harpenden. From May, services to the town could become more crowded as East Midland trains will cease stopping at Bedford and Luton during the morning and evening peaks, meaning passengers will instead have to use Thames Link services. To accommodate this increase, Thames Link has rejigged their timetable, something which the Harpenden Thames Link commuters group predicts will mean 52 fewer carriages on the fast trains to London. Harpenden MP Bim Afolami has a debate in the Houses of Parliament booked for April the 18th, and St Albans District Council leader Alec Campbell has written to Transport Secretary Chris Grayling to arrange a meeting. Councillor Campbell wrote, "I fully recognise and welcome the investment being made in the Thames Link and Midland Mainline services. We have been told this will deliver significantly improved services in the future. Indeed, Harpenden passengers have been promised an improved service for many years. This degradation of service has been done with no consultation and no warning." His letter followed one from the leader of Harpenden Thames Link commuters, Emily Ketchin, which asked Mr. Grayling to order Thames Link to reverse the unacceptable changes. Thames Link Head of Strategic Planning, Phil Hutchinson, said, "Although the pattern of Harpenden's services through the day is changing slightly in May, overall capacity is increasing, especially at the busiest times. For instance, there are currently 10 trains from Harpenden arriving at St Pancras between 8 and 9 a.m., from May until December, there will be 9 trains in this period, but with a total of 4 more carriages. And from December, there will be 10 trains again, providing a total of 16 more carriages. In the evening between 5 and 7, from May, there will be 2 more Harpenden services leaving St Pancras for Harpenden, and many trains will be longer, making a very significant increase of 44 carriages in total. We're modernising the railway, bringing huge improvements for passengers on much of the route. Unfortunately, the changes to East Midlands trains timetable and the request for us to mitigate this by fast-tracking some of our Bedford services means that the improvements on this scale for Harpenden won't now be realised until 2020, when the route modernisation programme north of Bedford is complete.
Hello, I'm Jenny. This piece is entitled District Residents Are Among Luton's Most Frequent Flyers. Residents of St Albans District are the county's most frequent flyers from Luton Airport, according to a new report. More than 1.2 million passengers travelled through the airport in total during March, marking the airport's busiest ever Easter and 14th consecutive month that the airport has had more than a million passengers. Data released by the CAA, Civil Aviation Authority, shows that more passengers from Hertfordshire use Luton than any other London airport, with 1,897,215 flying from the airport last year, a 24% increase from 2015. Hart's residents made up 12% of the airport's total passenger numbers. Of these, St Albans residents flew the most, with 402,980 passengers passing through the airport in 2017, the equivalent of 2.9 journeys for every resident. After St Albans, Decorum and North Harts residents were the next most frequent flyers, with 323,511 and 265,838 from these areas respectively. In total, 13% of passengers from Hertfordshire travelled for business, whilst 87% travelled for leisure. There's a rather cute photograph of a plane flying over the air traffic control tower, which somehow doesn't look quite real.
Hello, my name is Lisanne, and my first article is called Controversy Still Surrounds Bid to Build Cheap Homes on Protected Wildlife Habitat. Campaigners have riled against yet another attempt to build houses on a Harpenden wildlife habitat populated with protected animals. Harpenden Town Council, HTC, has submitted its fourth planning application to St Albans District Council, SADC, to build affordable houses on the former Westfield Road allotment site. The authority wants to develop 24 homes on the 0.6 hectare space to the northeast of Harpenden Town Centre, which was last used for allotments in 1999. The site and 2 kilometres around it is home to breeding birds, toads, frogs, slow worms, grass snakes and Roman snails, or Helix pomatia, which are protected under the Wildlife and Countryside Act 1981. These snails forage, hibernate and find cover on the Westfield Road Green. An RSK Environment Limited investigation in April and May 2016 and May 2017, made on behalf of HTC, found 66 snails living on the space. They stressed there were likely to be many more, as the whole area could not be extensively searched by hand. This particular housing scheme has been in the making since 2015, when two public exhibitions were held. The former allotment site has proved controversial for more than a decade. Planning permission was sought by HTC in 2005 for 42 flats on the site, but it was refused. St Albans District Council, SADC, again rejected an application to build 20 affordable homes on the land in 2010, because the access path crossed over part of a Sustrans cycle network. In 2013, HTC wanted to build an access road next to the site, but that was withdrawn after backlash against plans to dump any excavated soil onto the wildlife habitat. At that time, HTC's ruling Conservative administration said it had a 2007 mandate to dispose of the site at tender, as it was part of its election manifesto. A four-year MenCap scheme to build homes for people with learning disabilities on the site was dashed in 2014 when the charity decided the space was not big enough to provide the number of homes it needed. When MenCap pulled out, HTC reverted back to its original plan to build affordable housing.
This headline is, "When Will Something Be Done About Disruptive Neighbours?" and features a photograph of a local Sandridge resident standing outside the Sandridge Parish notice board. Antisocial behaviour and drug abuse allegedly caused by council tenants in a Sandridge neighbourhood are devastating their neighbours' lives. Alan Easterbrook, who played for St Albans City Football Club in the 1970s, said, "The council is more concerned with protecting the tenants who cause the problem than the people around them. The situation brought us all together as a community, but after everything we've done and getting nothing in return, everyone has turned against each other. The contractor, who's previously worked at the Marlborough Almshouses on Hatfield Road, has resorted to wax earplugs and leaving an air conditioning unit running all night to try to cancel out the tenants' disruptive shouting. Around 8 people have come forward about the problem, including an elderly woman who lives near to Mr Easterbrook. Hearts Police and St Albans Council have met with Mr Easterbrook and other residents to discuss the situation, and District Councillors Beric Reid and Francis Leonard are also monitoring the issue in contact with the residents. Sandridge Parish Clerk Simon Thwaites has written to Hearts Chief Constable Charlie Hall about the situation. Councillors are very concerned about the continued illegal activities at this location and ask that a full review is made of what actions have been taken to date, with a view to bringing activities to an end for long-suffering residents nearby." Hearts Police spokesperson said, "We will always investigate allegations of crime and would urge anyone who believes crime is taking place in their neighbourhood to report it to police so we can build an intelligence picture and take action where appropriate." St Albans Council's Head of Housing, Karen Dragovich, said, "When tenants sign our tenancy agreements, they agree not to carry out any form of antisocial behaviour at their property or to use it for illegal activities. We will always investigate complaints about our tenants that relate to antisocial behaviour, including illegal activities and excessive noise."
This article is entitled "Discovering the Past in Our Landscape Through the Works of Designer Humphrey Repton." Humphrey Repton, who lived from 1752 to 1818, began working as a landscape designer 5 years after the death of Lancelot Capability Brown in 1783. This spring, the University of Hertfordshire Press marks his bicentenary with a lavishly illustrated volume on Repton's Hertfordshire commissions, the result of several years' hard work by members of the Hertfordshire Gardens Trust, HGT, research group. New Barns at Sopwell and Wall Hall, Aldenham, are among the historic Repton landscapes that the HGT volunteer researchers explored. Using a mix of site surveys and dogged detective work in libraries and archives, they worked to identify the site and to establish how far Repton's ideas were realised and how much survives of them on the ground today. The research was directed by Professor Tom Williamson of the University of East Anglia, who co-edits the book with former Hertfordshire archivist Sue Flood. In 1797, Matthew Togood, a businessman whose father had made a fortune in banking and trade, bought the small 192-acre estate of New Barns. On this site today is the Sopwell House Hotel and Verulam Golf Course. The ambitious and wealthy Togood called in Humphrey Repton in 1802, but did not agree with some of the designer's suggestions. In the same year, Repton was advising George Thellison, another man with a fortune, looking for an elegant country home. Thellison bought Wall Hall, then known as Wars Hall, in Aldenham, and carried out extensive changes to both house and grounds. Repton generally relied on subtle effects, unlike his predecessor, Capability Brown. "If Brown was a cosmetic surgeon," said co-editor Tom Williamson, "Repton was a makeup artist." Repton's 30-year career crossed from the 18th century to the 19th, his style bridging the landscape parks of Brown and the more structured gardens of the Victorian period. A skilled artist, Repton is famed for the individual red books he produced for his clients. Beautifully bound in red Moroccan leather, the books contain Repton's watercolour paintings of the before views of a landscape with a flap to lift to reveal the after view.
This piece is about flexibility at the working place, how Flexappeal is becoming the new standard for working mums. If you've had children, or if you know anyone who has had children, or indeed just if you've worked with other people within the last few years, you may well have had experience of flexible working or the idea of changing your working hours upon returning to work after having children. The requirements and need to have flexibility in the workplace seems to be growing rapidly. With more and more women filling pivotal roles within businesses, it only makes sense that they are wanting to return to these roles following periods of maternity leave. Although they may not be wanting to leave their previous roles, they may also be wanting to have more flexibility in their own working hours to allow for picking up their children from childcare, or indeed to allow them to spend more time with their children during the working week. One person who's been working tirelessly to enable women more opportunity for flexible working is Anna Whitehouse, also known as Mother Pucker on Instagram. Anna previously worked as a journalist, but for the last few years has been championing all things related to flexible working. Local mumpreneur Daniel Wallington, who has set up events company Milk and Fizz, invited Anna along to a recent brunch to talk to guests about her quest for flexible working and about her hugely successful best-selling book, Parenting the SH blank T Out of Life. Held in the fantastic surroundings of Hatfield House, the brunch was packed out with local mums who were all keen to hear Anna's thoughts of returning to work with flexible working, and also to hear about her life as an Instagram celebrity. The guests sat enraptured as Anna told us all about her quest for flexible working and why it's so important to her. Balancing her youngest daughter on her knee and the microphone in her hand, she talked passionately about how she feels when women, specifically women, although of course there is an acknowledgement that flexible working is important for all, not just women, are forced out of the workplace just because they have children. One of the things that Anna is planning to do is start going into schools and educating young men about the need for flexible working. The hope that by educating the workforce and potential business leaders of the future, she can preempt problems for future employees seeking flexibility in their working hours. There is much evidence to suggest that by allowing flex working, companies can retain or attract a highly skilled workforce who've been overlooked in the other companies, often gaining highly qualified people who just need a little flexibility in which to work their hours. There is quite a cute picture of Anna Whitehouse with the microphone in one hand and her baby laughing in the other arm.
Coffee shop grinds out new form of eco-fuel from its waste products. An independent coffee shop has become the first in the county to adopt a new way of recycling coffee grounds to reduce waste. Charlie's Coffee and Company serves coffee and pastries every weekday morning from a van at St Albans Station, as well as running a coffee shop from Tuesdays to Saturdays on London Road. The company has now teamed up with clean technology company BioBean and waste management services, Corley's, who estimate that at each coffee outlet in St Albans served just 20 cups of coffee in a single-use cup, it would produce 600,000 kilos of ground coffee waste a year. Business owner and head bean, Charlie, said, "We now recycle all of our spent coffee grounds. This is a really new scheme in the UK, and to be one of the first to be involved is brilliant. Let's hope a few more follow suit and we begin to reuse tons and tons of coffee grounds. Local waste management company Corley's pick these grounds up from the shop and process them with a great company called BioBean, who turns waste coffee into biofuels. One biofuel that is created by them are coffee logs, which are amazing for fires to heat your home. I started selling these coffee logs from my shop on London Road in autumn 2016, and since then have built up an enthusiastic coffee log fan base who have bought them regularly over the colder months. My environmental commitments have always been at the forefront of what I do. Each coffee log is made from the grounds of 25 cups of coffee and contains 20% more energy than wood. Charlie's business has won St Albans Food and Drinks Award for Best Coffee Bar 2009 and Best Cafe 2011. She also won the Kate Darcy Award for Exceptional Customer Service. Coffee waste is a growing topic at the moment, with the government considering the introduction of a latte levy to reduce the issue.
This is entitled Squat Life Project Places Homelessness in Spotlight, and it's illustrated with two wonderful black and white photographs of people squatting in St Albans in the 1980s. An arts and heritage project to show the history of homelessness in St Albans has received funding from the Heritage Lottery Fund. St Albans Arts Team has received a £50,000 grant for the Squat Life Project, which will highlight historical and contemporary responses to homelessness for an exhibition at the new St Albans Museum and Galleries. The project, which aims to give insight into a previously under-researched aspect of local history, was inspired by David Cotula's photographs of squatted premises in the city in the 1980s. The photos will form part of the first community-focused exhibition to be shown at the Museum and Gallery, which is set to open this summer. At the exhibition, Dave's photos of local squats will be on display alongside the stories of the people who used them. The photos will be contrasted with a view of Victorian and pre-Victorian workhouses and historical attitudes towards homelessness. Volunteers from St Albans and Hertfordshire's Archaeological and Architectural Society will help with the project, alongside heritage professionals from St Albans Museum Service. Theatre company Cardboard Citizens will also work with homeless or recently homeless residents from the district to create a performance for the Abbey Theatre, while professional photographers will work with people attending Hearts Young Homeless to capture snapshots of their lives. Participants who've experienced homelessness will have the chance to share their experience and receive accredited training along the way. Historically, St Albans Abbey has played a role in helping the homeless, as Benedictine monks were instructed to relieve the poor, to clothe the naked, to visit the sick, to bury the dead, to help the afflicted, and to console the sorrowing.
Campaigning activist who helped save the former Odeon Cinema building has died, aged 79. A stalwart campaigner responsible for preserving much of the heritage of St Albans has died at the age of 79 following a long illness. Marion Hammond was not only behind the campaign to save the Art Deco building, which now houses the Odyssey Cinema, but also actively battled to secure many other aspects of the city, which we now take for granted. Brought up in Upminster, Essex, as one of four children, Marion moved to Hertfordshire after becoming an English teacher, and she met her late husband, Marsden, who taught art. They eventually settled in St Albans, and after retiring, Marion worked in Fagan's Books opposite the clock tower. It was at this point she became involved in many campaigns focusing on the development of St Albans, both individually and later as an active member of the civic society. She was a key player in the Chequer Street Action Group of the late 1990s, which oversaw how the Maltings shopping centre should look and fit in with its surroundings. Later, she joined the Save the Gombards Ewes and Wall, opposite the former Spotted Bull pub. The group's £13,000 scheme to save both trees and wall over the district council's £54,000 plan to fell and demolish them eventually won the day, but the battle raged on for months, with the Hearts ad covering the story almost weekly between July and November 1999. In 2000, she was persuaded to join the Civic Society and bring her communication and campaigning skills to the committee. She remained a member until her death, and in the weeks before she passed away, she still enjoyed discussing past and present issues. One of her biggest contributions to local life was leading the campaign to save the Odeon Building, now the Odyssey Cinema. Along with a small group of Civic Society members, she attended both planning appeals, speaking at one before the inspector. When the council caved in on June 9, 2008, and granted demolition, the group fought on, despite ridicule from some councillors. The campaigners contacted James Hannaway of the Rex, and £1 million had to be raised in 6 months to acquire the building, a campaign which was extensively supported by the Hearts advertiser. The St Albans public responded and the building was secured, and then more money was duly raised for the refurbishment. James Hannaway paid tribute to Marion at the Odyssey's opening night in 2015 for her determination and nagging, the last time that Marion properly appeared in public.
This piece is Friends Mourn Talented St Peter Street Busker. Tributes have been paid to a beautiful, talented campaigner who busked in St Albans. Father of two, Johnny Walker, who often performed outside Boots in St Peter Street, died suddenly aged 37 in hospital after 3 days in a high dependency care unit. He toured the UK for 15 years with his popular covers and self-penned songs and made genuine, strong friendships through professional busking, which he more recently began live-streaming to followers from his iPad. He played in St Albans regularly and often declared it one of his famous favourite places to busk. The Liverpool-born guitarist and singer described himself as a wandering minstrel and travelled daily to scores of towns and cities. He campaigned for buskers and often other street artists' right to enjoy open public spaces, and his not-for-profit campaign, Keep Streets Live, garnered huge national support. Boris Johnson once borrowed his guitar. Billy Bragg campaigned alongside him, and he was also patron of Yorkshire homeless charity In Churches. His family announced his sudden death on his Facebook page, devastating his 24,000 followers, many of whom were friends. They posted, "It's with great sorrow but immense thankfulness for a passionately lived life that after 3 days in the critical care unit at Leeds General Infirmary, Johnny died peacefully at 11:13 a.m. on Wednesday the 14th of March, surrounded by family."
The next article is entitled, 13 years after he died, the memory of Ollie Mills lives on in charity football fundraiser. A school in St Albans has held its seventh memorial football match in honour of a former pupil who died of a brain tumour. Pupils, teachers and old boys from Verulam School in Brampton Road gathered in Clarence Park on Thursday, March the 29th to remember Ollie Mills, who died from a brain tumour in 2005, aged 18. The Mills match is held every 2 years and sees teachers play against pupils at the home of St Albans City Football Club. Over the years, the event has raised more than £45,000 for Teenage Cancer Trust and adds to the money raised by the Ollie Mills Foundation, which was set up by Ollie's brother, Eddie. More than 1,000 people attended to watch the match, and the teachers beat the pupils for the second match in a row with a last-minute victory of 3-2. The Ollie Mills Foundation has raised nearly £250,000 for Teenage Cancer Trust since it was founded. A statement on the Foundation's website says, Ollie and his brother Eddie enjoyed their best years at Verulam and we are proud to be partnering with them. This year's Mills Match 7 raised over £5,000 and we're already looking forward to the next instalment in 2020. Ollie was a fun-loving, outgoing, caring and general all-round good guy who was loved and is missed by all. We know that Teenage Cancer Trust would have been a charity he'd have admired, and it's an honour to raise money for them and keep his name alive in the process. When Ollie died at the Royal Free Hospital, despite receiving excellent care, he was treated on a ward with much older people, which is why his mum Sarah and brother Eddie felt Teenage Cancer Trust would be the right charity to support in his name, as it provides specialist cancer units specifically for young people.
Here are the names of people and their ages when it has been published who've died since the last edition of the Advertiser and whose names are recorded in this week's edition. Jenny Amis, Mary Ann Curran, Anne Deacon, Edna Fitzgerald, Marion Hammond, age 79, about whom we've heard a full obituary article. Ron Holpin, aged 81. Clive Anthony Janes. Geoffrey Arthur Littlechild, aged 74. Barbara Marion. Eddie Meaton, aged 84. James Morrissey, aged 48. Pamela Margaret Talentar, aged 87. Sheila Ann Thompson, aged 79. And Dennis Geoffrey Murray Wood, aged 90. We hope that their souls rest in peace and send our condolences to their families. There will now be a short musical interval. In the second part of the programme, we'll read the comments of the Advertiser's editor and of Matt Brigg, editor of the St Albans Film Festival. This will be followed by two readers' letters about the same problem, the reciting or possible reciting of the St Albans FA Football Club Stadium. This will be followed by further news items and a list of radio programmes of interest. Now I'll return to Michael for the next series of articles.
This is the Hartshead comment entitled No One Quite Like Marion. It was a little over 9 years ago that, as a newly ensconced editor of the Harts Advertiser, I had the pleasure of addressing the St Albans Civic Society about my plans for the title. As if this gathering of Albanians wasn't formidable enough, at the heart of the gathering was the imposing presence of Marion Hammond, whose influence was evident even among the collection of her civic-minded peers. Over the following few years, my paths crossed with Marion's on numerous occasions, most prominent of which being when the Harts Ad and the Civic Society joined forces to save the old Odeon Cinema building in London Road. Marion was an old hat at running campaigns, having been instrumental in the fight to preserve Chequer Street from unnecessary development when the Mortings Shopping Centre was built in the 1980s. As the spearhead of the battle to prevent the demolition of the Odeon, Marion badgered James Hannaway, owner of the Rex Cinema in Berkhamsted, into buying the building, helping to raise the necessary funds for both the purchase and its eventual refurbishment. What better legacy can there be to Marion's remarkable influence over the heritage of St Albans than the site of that impressive Art Deco building, now transformed into the showpiece Odyssey? And there's a photograph of the Odyssey next to the article. Marion was a regular reader of the Hearts Advertiser until her death, and it's reassuring to know that the changes I've made over the years have largely met with her seal of approval. R.I.P. Marion, we will miss you. Back on the planning agenda for the umpteenth time is the bid by Harpenden Town Council to develop the former Westfield allotment site for housing. As on previous occasions, the same questions must surely be asked about the scheme. But HTC has refused to comment on their plans when approached by this newspaper. So we'll put them into the public arena instead. Why is the Town Council acting as a planning authority? Why did the former town clerk threaten the Hearts ad and an independent campaigner with legal action, at the taxpayers' expense, over coverage of the scheme? How will the site be reached when nobody knows who owns the key access route? What about the rare and protected wildlife on the site? What infrastructure improvements are proposed for the development and surrounding area? Why was this project not put forward for inclusion in the district local plan as part of the call for sites? If HTC continually refuses to respond to any of these questions, maybe someone else would care to do so. Answers on a postcard, please.
This opinion is given by Matt Big, who is the director of St Albans Film Festival. It's entitled Get Filmmaking for Fest. Filmmaking is an important part of St Albans heritage. Leonie Kibbe, local actress, casting director and talent agent, created the first St Albans Film Festival in 2013 because she could not believe that a city so steeped in filmmaking history did not have one. Arthur Melbourne Cooper, who in 1895 developed the first British 35mm moving picture camera and was a pioneer in making moving pictures, was born in St Albans and opened one of the first ever cinemas as we know them today in 1908 in St Albans. This is now the Odyssey Cinema. And the legendary filmmaker Stanley Kubrick came to settle in the area, producing some of his most famous work, including The Shining, here. The St Albans Film Festival 2018 will take place this year from June the 26th to July the 1st. And the open-air cinema will make a welcome return to the Abbey Orchard. Last year, around 6,000 people from St Albans and further afield enjoyed one of the many films that were shown across a balmy summer week at the outside cinema, which was the first time a cinema screen had ever been put up in the cathedral grounds. The films have yet to be announced for the open-air cinema this year, so watch this space, as they all sold out last year. A range of food and drink stalls and a Prosecco and popcorn marquee will provide refreshments once again. Also, keep your eyes peeled for news on other film events taking place around the city. In past years, we have screened Great Expectations inside the cathedral, Jaws in the swimming pool at Westminster Lodge, student films in the town hall, immersive films in the clock tower, and horror films in the garden of the multi-award-winning Ye Olde Fighting Cox pub. This year, expect more of the same. Screenings, events, and talks of and about films in a variety of different exciting locations. And of course, the festival will end with the awards ceremony, which this year will be held at Ye Olde Fighting Cox, where winners of the filmmaking competition will be announced. And it is this competition that is at the heart of the festival. This year's theme for budding filmmakers is speed. It's a short film competition, so no film can be more than 20 minutes in length. And over the past 5 years, the St Albans Film Festival competition has earned its place alongside the bigger international film festivals, gaining credibility by attracting more than 1,500 entries from filmmakers from 40 countries. It is also worth noting that many of these filmmakers come to our city for the festival, as do other visitors from around the UK, all of which helps boost the local economy. And the good news is that there's still time to enter the competition for this year. The closing date is not until April the 30th. The categories are main short film, which could be a drama, comedy or a documentary, animation, student film for those aged 16 and over, young student film for those aged 5 to 15 years, short documentary and music video. So get your cameras out, get ready for your close-up and become part of St Albans filmmaking history.
This is a letter from Derek Wiley in Chiswell Green, entitled Traffic Fears Over New Stadium Plan. The proposed new football stadium and housing estate means yet another bit of green belt is to go. Noak Lane is a lane. It can't take that amount of traffic. And come to that, neither can the A405. If you have ever driven along it at rush hour times, you'll know that. With a 6,000-seat stadium, plus all the residents and office workers, how are they going to get there? There is no train and just a moderate bus service. Oh yes, by car. So where do they all park in Chiswell Green? Well, we could dig up yet another green field, I suppose. It's bad enough with the co-op parking causing congestion on the Watford Road without any more. A better site would be the Radlett Airfield with an access road from the M25.
I have a letter by June Hopkins from Noak Lane in Chiswell Green. And her letter is entitled Shocked by Scheme. I live at number 1 Noak Farm Cottage, Noak Lane, and was shocked to read that this proposal for a housing estate and football stadium was going to go forward for planning to St Albans Council. My house would be suffocated by this eyesore and would be situated in the centre of this ridiculous idea. Also, not to mention more noise and more traffic would be created to this area, considering there's traffic problems as it is from Junction 21A of the M25. Noak Lane is a peaceful and beautiful countryside area, and now someone else wants to destroy it.
This is entitled Session of Talks to Launch the 4th Annual Sustainable St Albans Week, and it's illustrated by a local resident and BBC sustainability employer, Suzanne Doland, leaning on the sign for Albert Square in the London borough of Walford. A series of talks on the theme of Our Planet, Our Future kickstarts this year's Sustainable St Albans Week. Rothamsted Research is hosting the first event of the Environmentally Minded Week, with speakers talking about a range of topics, including Knowledge is Power, Plastic Fishing Only, Growing Your Home, and Low Carbon Woman. Local resident and BBC sustainability employee Suzanne Dolan is planning on speaking about lowering carbon footprints. She worked on the popular soap EastEnders, helping the show to achieve Albert Plus certification, an online point scoring scheme which rewards media productions for sustainable production techniques and reducing carbon emissions against industry benchmarks. That would explain the photograph. Other programmes with a qualification include Series 5 of Endeavour, Who Do You Think You Are? And Loose Women. Also at the event, Rothamsted Research PhD student Darjeen Doliberman will be examining the potential to nutritiously eat insects in a talk entitled The Good, The Bad and The Bugly. Oh dear. Talks are interspersed with performances from the Vare Poets and will conclude with a reception where the audience can mingle with the speakers. The launch event takes place on April the 21st from 1:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Tickets are £15 from ourplanet2018.eventbrite.co.uk/sustainable St Albans Week and runs from April the 21st to the 29th.
This is about the Lions Club in Harpenden, and it's entitled Lions Club Marks a Milestone in its Campaign to Bring Life Skills to Schools. Harpenden Lions Club, which raises money to help those in need, is celebrating its 25th anniversary of bringing life skills education to local schools. Since the programme was founded in 1992, Harpenden Lions have raised more than £250,000 for schools in Harpenden, Redbourne and Wheat Hempstead. The anniversary event was held recently at Aldwickbury Park Golf Club and was attended by representatives from local schools, community representatives and the Hearts for Learning Wellbeing team. As well as raising awareness and thanking those who had given their support, attendees marked the work of Lion Neville Osmond, who was the club's driving force for many years until his death in 2016. Schools are encouraged to use the donations to support life skills education in ways that best meet pupils' needs. The programme began as a drug and alcohol awareness project, and education on these issues continues at Sir John Laws and Roundwood Park Schools in Harpenden. Both schools have used recent donations to buy in the service of educational theatre companies to run workshops on these issues. Other schools have used funding to develop children's interpersonal and reasoning skills, or to provide sessions on subjects including e-safety, cyberbullying and sex education. The Hearts for Learning Wellbeing team also provided mindfulness training, support for mental health issues and a healthy schools programme. At the event, Lion Brian Edwards thanked all the sponsors who had provided financial support and Hearts for Learning's children's wellbeing advisor, Kate Stockdale, said, "While academic qualifications are very important, they need to be supported by social and interpersonal skills for children to be able to truly fulfill and learn their potential." The programme currently benefits 27 schools in Harpenden and the neighbouring villages. The money is raised through activities such as the town's annual Highland Gathering, which is run by the Lions, as well as grants from local and national charities and businesses. There is a picture of four people who are obviously very involved in this work. One is Brian Edwards, who's the life skills lead at Lions, the Harpenden Lions Club, Harpenden Town Mayor Rosemary Farmer, Hearts for Learning Wellbeing Advisor Kate Stockdale, and also the Harpenden Lions Club President Mohan Kashyap.
A Harpenden woman is hoping to run part of an athletic event nearly 3 years after she was paralysed by a neurological condition. Emma Harrison, 29, was working in Myanmar in 2015 when she contracted dengue fever, normally quite a mild condition, but one which resulted in her suffering years of anguish. After picking up the fever, she visited a Myanmar doctor who told her to quickly evacuate the country, otherwise she may die. Emma said, "It took 16 hours to get back, but I do not remember much of it. By the time I had to get off the plane, I could not move." Her parents wanted her to receive treatment at the Hospital of Tropical Diseases in London and had to drive her there in person because the waiting ambulance wanted to take her to a nearby hospital instead. Once she was admitted, Emma was told that there was not much medics could do but monitor her and give her fluids. The fever had caused her counterplatelets, which clot the blood to prevent bleeding, had dropped to zero, causing her to experience internal bleeding. While suffering from dengue, Emma developed a complication called transverse myelitis, an inflammation around the spine which left her paralysed. Physiotherapists said to keep as active as possible, and Emma has since kept up an intensive physiotherapy schedule, which has helped her progress. However, after she kept being let down by specialists who did not know enough about her condition, the decision was made to take the responsibility for her own care, and through social media, Emma found out about a neurological recovery centre in Florida called NeuroFit 360. NeuroFit 360 offer a dual function type of training which challenges two systems at once, so patients go from sitting to standing up whilst holding a ball, which is usually automatic, but not for people with Emma's condition. Emma is returning to NeuroFit 360 for further treatment, so she can take part in the International Wings for Life World Run in Florida on May the 6th. People using walking frames and wheelchairs compete in the run, which is no set distance and takes place at locations around the world. There are a couple of pictures here, one in Emma exercising and the other one sitting on a wall in Myanmar.
Mountain Mission is aiming to raise awareness of ME. An ME sufferer is taking on the highest mountain in Britain to raise money for charity. Emma Jenkins of Redbourne was diagnosed with a neurological disorder in 1999. She was bedbound and spoon-fed for 5 years and in a wheelchair for many months after that. The 44-year-old finally started to get her strength back, walking a Bichon Frise called MEM, and 5 years after that felt confident enough to move into her own home. She has been working part-time as a waitress in Redbourne's The Hub for about 6 years. Even though the challenge may risk her health, Emma is determined to climb Ben Nevis on foot with her husband, Peter, 39, in order to raise awareness of the condition and money for the ME Association. She said, "My worst days were lying in bed trapped, in pain and feeling lonely. I became imprisoned in my own room and could not sleep for weeks. My mum had to feed me with food that I was not allergic to, as my immune system wasn't working properly and I was too weak to feed myself." Emma and Peter first challenged themselves to climb Snowdon a few years ago and since then have tackled both Scarfell Pike and Skiddaw. However, Ben Nevis is the highest of them all.
This is entitled Games Excitement for Hockey Team Support. Harpenden locals are helping Team England go for gold at the Commonwealth Games. Hockey talent Andy Halliday and physiotherapist Sophie Weaver travelled to Australia's Gold Coast on March the 24th with the England men's hockey team to assist them trying to bag a medal. Andy, who went to St Albans Grammar and represented the city's side, has been the team's manager for about 10 years, as well as being hockey coach at St Albans School and head coach for the indoor England men's and women's teams. He said, "It's fantastic. One of the best Olympic villages we've been to. It's really good. It's comfortable. The accommodation and food are good. And we're really close to everything." The men's team have thrashed Malaysia 7-0, drawn with Pakistan 2-2, and beat Wales 3-2. The two top teams of each group will compete for medals. St George's School alumni Sophie has been the team's physiotherapist for about a year. As a physiotherapist for the English Institute for Sport, Sophie has also worked with badminton players and fencers. She said, "Hockey players are more likely to get fractures in the high trauma sport, but it does not faze her. About 6,600 athletes and team officials from 71 Commonwealth nations have travelled to the Gold Coast, Brisbane, Cairns and Townsville to participate in the Commonwealth Games 2018, which finish on April the 15th. And there's a photograph of Andy and Sophie at the Gold Coast at the Commonwealth Games. And I can tell you, unfortunately, England women are out of the semi-finals, but they're hoping to go for bronze.
Now, these are some radio listenings for the Talking Newspaper recording Thursday, the 12th of April, 2018. If you listen to the radio on a regular basis during the week, here's a selection of programmes that might be of interest and tempt you to tune in over the coming days. Starting with Saturday, April the 14th, and in the afternoon at 2:30 p.m. on Radio 4, the drama is an adaptation of a classic sci-fi novel by John Wyndham. The Kraken Awakes was written in 1953, but this dramatisation has been adapted for radio by Val McDermott, herself an acclaimed thriller writer. Music performed by the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra adds to the tensions of this terrifying depiction of an alien invasion and global flooding. Part one of The Kraken Awakes is on Radio 4 at 2:30 p.m. this Saturday. Then later at 8 p.m. again on Radio 4, Archive on 4 marks 50 years since the MP Enoch Powell delivered his incendiary Rivers of Blood speech to a Conservative Party meeting in Birmingham. Only part of the speech was actually recorded in 1968, but in this programme, Amol Rajan reflects on the impact the speech continues to have today, and for the first time, the transcript of Enoch Powell's words will be read in full by the actor Ian McDermott. The speech included observations on immigrants made by Powell's Wolverhampton constituents and ended with a reference to a moment in Virgil's Aeneid when the prophetess Sibyl predicts civil war in Italy with the river Tiber foaming with much blood. This programme should provide an interesting assessment of the impact that speech had 50 years ago and its continuing impact today.
So now on to Sunday, April the 15th, when if you tune in to BBC World Service at 9:30 a.m. or in the evening at 11:30 p.m, you can hear Heart and Soul. This particular edition of the programme is about faith and healing and follows the serious doubts and spiritual challenges that the BBC Religious Affairs correspondent Carolyn Wyatt has faced since she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis last year. She's a Roman Catholic, but the experience of her chronic illness and the deterioration in her health and well-being has led her to reflect on what the purpose might be behind her life-limiting diagnosis. Carolyn Wyatt talks during the course of the programme to fellow Christians, a rabbi, a Muslim, and a Buddhist therapist to draw on their reflections about faith, healing, and living with a chronic and debilitating disease. On Sunday evening on Classic FM, David Meller marks 100 years since the death of Claude Debussy, with a selection of popular favourites including Clair de Lune and The Girl with the Flaxen Hair, as well as some lesser-known works and Debussy's Nocturnes. That all starts at 7 p.m. on Classic FM. Over on Radio 4 from 7:15 p.m. on Sunday, Ruby Wax is frazzled. She's not stressed or depressed. The state of the frazzlement is more to do with a brain that won't switch off and a 24-hour bombardment of news and social media. In conjunction with the Marks and Spencers, Ruby Wax has set up a number of frazzled cafes with the tagline, "It's okay not to be okay." So this programme is a sort of group therapy session with cafe visitors simply sharing a chat in an attempt to diffuse their frazzled state. If drama is more to your taste on Sunday evening, then switch to Radio 3 to hear a new production of Oscar Wilde's 1892 comedy, Lady Windermere's Fan. It's a play that has much to say about the depiction of the sexes, so despite its vintage, Lady Windermere's Fan resonates for now as well as then. It starts at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3.
From Monday to Friday, there are a number of programmes that are broadcast daily at the same time, so this week they include The Book of the Week, which is Dearest Squirrel, and features the love letters written and exchanged by the playwright John Osborne and his love of over 30 years, Pamela Lane. The correspondence between them offers a very fresh perspective on one of our greatest writers of modern drama, and you can hear Dearest Squirrel at 9:45 each day on Radio 4. Then the drama at 10:45 each morning on Radio 4 and repeated in the evening at 7:45 p.m. is "She said, he said." Set on a university campus, 2 months after Freshers' Week, a young woman goes to the police station, and as a result of her action, a young man is stunned to be accused of rape. Eileen Horne's drama is based on extensive interviews with people on all sides of a painful subject. Over on Radio 3 at 12 noon, from Monday to Friday, the composer of the week is Giuseppe Verdi, who lived from 1813 to 1901 and established himself as the most successful Italian composer of his generation. Donald MacLeod unravels a story of driving ambition, run-ins with the authorities, and emotional tragedy in the life of Verdi, and of course, there's the music to go with it. For Night Owls, the book at bedtime on Radio 4 this week is The One Who Wrote Destiny by Nikesh Shukla. Set in 1966, it's the story of three generations of the same family who moved from Kenya to the UK to the drizzly northern town of Cayley. Book at bedtime is at 10:45 each evening on Radio 4.
And now some of the other radio highlights during the week that you might like to listen to. Fans of Spike Milligan won't want to miss the drama on Monday, the 16th of April, on Radio 4. Spike and the Elfin Oak. David Threlfall does a terrific rendition of Spike in a comic fantasy which nevertheless has its roots in reality. In the mid-1960s, Spike Milligan was appearing in the West End run of his play, The Bed-Sitting Room, and his agent was frantically trying to persuade him to tone down some of the political references in his play to appease the authorities. Spike had other priorities, though. He was on a mission to save an oak sculpture in London's Kensington Gardens. He wanted to preserve this hollow oak, not for the human visitors, but, as he put it, for the elves and fairies whose home it was. Expect surreal and laugh-out-loud comedy from 2:15 p.m. on Monday on Radio 4 with Spike and the Elfin Oak. I'm sure, as many of you know, Spike was a resident in Knapsbury Hospital on and off in the 70s and 80s. On Wednesday, the 18th of April, Soul Music takes to the air again at 9 a.m. on Radio 4 and is repeated in the evening at 9:30 p.m. The music that has proved life-changing for the people who feature in the programme is Debussy's Prelude à la Midi d'une Faune. The poet, Ishan Hutchinson, heard it by chance for the first time through an open window in a street in Kingston, Jamaica. It was a time of civil and political unrest, but the music calmed down his troubled mind and led to him to write a poem inspired by the melody. The same music had a profound effect on Babak Kazemi. He abandoned his studies to become a doctor in Iran and instead moved to the United Kingdom to become a composer in his own right. Late but Great on Wednesday evening is 6 Degrees of John Sessions at 11 p.m. on Radio 4, when the actor, writer, raconteur and impressionist entertains us with showbiz anecdotes, intriguing history and inspired impressions. You can go to sleep with laughter ringing in your ears. It's just 15 minutes of fun. That's Wednesday, 11 p.m. on Radio 4. And so to Friday, the 20th of April, and if you enjoy brass band music, you're in for a treat as Radio 2 broadcasts the final of the Young Brass Band Award live from the Royal Northern College of Music in Manchester from 8 p.m. The competition is open to all brass players aged between 16 and 21, and four young hopefuls have reached the finals to blast it out for the title this year. Ken Bruce and Frank Renton host on Radio 2 on Friday evening from 8 p.m. I hope you've enjoyed these recommendations and may as a result listen to some of the highlighted programmes. The listings were provided by volunteer Jill Burridge. And here are some of the local entertainments available to us all during the next few weeks, concentrating mainly on music. However, at the Abbey Theatre on Friday and Saturday, the 20th and 21st of April at 8 p.m, on Sunday the 22nd of April at 2:30 p.m, and each evening at 8 p.m. from 24th, that's Tuesday the 24th, to Saturday the 26th of April at 8 p.m, the Company of Ten are presenting an interesting play based on a story by Chekhov called The Argument. As usual, the Company of Ten's Thursday performance will have an audiovisual description, so if you want to book earphones and seats, phone 01727 857 861. At the Maltings Theatre on the 17th of April, that's next Tuesday at 7:30 p.m, you can listen to a jazz concert performed by the Stan Tracy Legacy Octet. This concert is organised by the Hearts Jazz Club and is one of a series being held on Tuesday evenings at the Maltings Theatre during the next few weeks. For further details, phone 0333 66 3366. At the Cathedral on Saturday, the 21st of April at 7:30, you can hear that most wonderful music of Handel's Messiah, performed by the St Albans Choral Society, accompanied by the Orchestra Nova. For further details and tickets, phone 01727 890 290. This Saturday, the 14th of April at 7:30, you could attend an organ concert by Richard Hill at the St Albans Organ Theatre. Just have to turn up at the door and get tickets there. That's in Camp Road in St Albans. On the 18th of April, the regular lunchtime concert at St Peter's Church at 1 p.m. is a jazz concert performed by BHW Jazz Trio. Entry is free, and there is a collection in aid of the Rennie Grove Hospice. We are coming to the end of this recording, and so from Jenny, Lysanne, Mayo and Michael, Danny, Fiona and Mekki, goodbye. And for me, it's adieu.